Good morning, New Orleans, and we have a great show lined up for you today. In the last hour, we're going to talk about a number of hot topics that are out there, two of which the United States Postal Service gets a huge rate hike as they continue to rack up losses. And also, a Wisconsin company gives out Christmas gifts to their employees, handguns. And what your thoughts may be about that. In the second hour, we're going to be talking to Larry Carter, the interim president for the Louisiana Federation of Teachers, and their talk about whether or not teachers will be going on a strike if they don't get the pay raises that they have been desiring for any number of years. And joining us on the line is Stan Voiger. He's a resident scholar with the American Enterprise Institute. His research is in the political economy and public finance area. Stan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Newell. How you doing?
Doing great. So, you know, the big question in post-midterm elections is, has the expansion of the economy, has it peaked, or can we expect it to continue to grow?
I think it peaked. I think it peaked in the second quarter when we had growth over 4%. That's right after we had the big spending bill, so we got a lot of fiscal stimulus from that, and that's also when a lot of the effects of the stimulus from the tax bill were sort of at their high point. Last quarter, we saw growth a little below 4%. Expectations are that now in the fourth quarter, we're going to be a little bit below 3%. And then next year, we're going to be, you know, basically back in the 2% range, which is where we were before we had these two large fiscal stimulus packages. So I think from here on out, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a little less pretty than this past year. But, of course, we do still have a very low unemployment rate. And, you know, we'll be at a growth rate that's sustainable given sort of the demographics, given the way productivity has been developing, et cetera.
Stan, in true bipartisan nature, just a little tongue-in-cheek here, the president says that this is all because of the angst and anxiety of the Democrats taking over control of the House.
Yeah, that's right. I saw that.
Sounds like your response is the same as mine.
Yeah, that's right. The you know, these forecasts have been in the works for a while. I think, yeah, I think the macroeconomics are reasonably clear.
And you know, when we talk about macroeconomics, I think it's important to point out is that the U.S. was actually the benefit of the synchronized growth across the global economy. You had a lot of the major countries around the world where they were all experiencing growth, and it seemed to be all somewhat connected, and now it's getting a little bit more disjointed, which is not out of the ordinary.
No, I think that's right. And so what we've been seeing in the U.S., which is that monetary policy is going back to normal, we've been seeing a little bit of that in other countries as well. Of course, the U.S. raising its interest rates has drawn some capital out of emerging markets, back to the U.S., and so some of those countries that have been struggling, like we've seen in Brazil, we've seen in Argentina. Of course, there have been these massive trade disputes, which I think have had their impact on the international side of the U.S. economy as well. So, you know, none of that has been super helpful. But, you know, I think it's important to remember the U.S. is an enormous economy, and these sort of trade impacts aren't as important to the U.S. economy as they are for some of our trading partners, right? It's very different for Canada when trade flows slow down than it is for the U.S., which relies so much more on its large domestic market.
I've been surprised by the impact on China. I've been looking at some data, and I've been very surprised that a lot of this has really affected the Chinese economy in a big, not that it's substantial, but in a bigger way than I thought it would have.
Yeah, so the Chinese economy is more open. A lot of its large companies are very export reliant. You know, you have some big tech companies, but you don't have companies like a Walmart, right, which does a lot of its business domestically and is enormous, is exposed from the import side but not from the export side. China, of course, had been struggling for a couple of years before the trade dispute started. And now people, I think, are worried that supply chains will get rerouted a little bit. It did a lot of stimulus after the financial crisis hit, and that's tapered off. So I think that combination of of effects has been harming China a little bit.
We heard a lot of noise coming out of Japan for a while, and it seems to have been lessened. What's actually going on with their economy, and how are they affected by what some of the predatory actions that we have taken in Southeast Asia?
So Japan's big problem is that it's aged very quickly, and its population is now declining. you have to do a really good job innovating and doing things like that and investing carefully if you want to grow quickly with a declining population. So that's just the major issue there. They've struggled now for two decades trying to get aggregate demand up to a level where the economy functions in a normal manner. They haven't really succeeded. They haven't been able to hit their inflation targets in years. And so I think that's the big issue there. I don't think they've been as involved in the various trade disputes as China or as Canada or even the European Union, because I think they negotiated their way out of any kind of dispute with the U.S. pretty early on. So, I think their issues are much more structural and much harder to deal with.
Yep. Stan, can you stay with us through the break real quick?
For sure.
When we come back, I want to talk about where you see the new NAFTA deal going and what's that going to mean to the U.S. As their economies and, in the case of Mexico, their leadership is changing and what we can expect from that happenstance as well. We'll be right back after the break. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL. We're back and we're talking to Stan Voiger with the American Enterprise Institute. His research is in political economy and public finance. And Stan, I wanted to get your thoughts about the revised NAFTA agreement. It seems as though in Canada, they're predicting that growth is going to ease back a little. And in Mexico, I guess on the strength of the elections and new leadership, maybe up a little bit. What do we see as it from the U.S. perspective as how that's going to look in 2019 and 2020?
Well, on NAFTA specifically, the big new issue, of course, is that Democrats now have control of the House of Representatives. The House and Senate leadership have announced that they're not going to take up the new treaty before the new Congress. And so we're now in this situation where House Democrats are going to make demands as to what should be in the treaty, even though the negotiations with Mexico and Canada are, in theory, done. The incoming speaker, presumably Nancy Pelosi, has already spoken about certain changes she wants to see made. And, I don't know what the process is going to be for this, because in theory, the negotiations are done. So I think that's going to be a big source of uncertainty looming over especially over the Mexican economy. But certainly also over pockets of the U.S. economy. And I don't know how that's going to work out.
With the election of AMRO and some of his, I guess, for lack of a better term, socialistic views in Mexico, how's that going to pan out moving forward with our relationship with them?
Well, I think so. They're so far so good, I'd almost say. So he, of course, domestically, there is certainly room for him to do damage. But on the NAFTA negotiation front, I think the new Mexican administration has been pretty cooperative, actually. And in a certain sense, it's been a big contrast with the way the process has been handled from the U.S. side. So the AMLO and his team were pretty heavily involved in the final stages of the negotiation process, and they're on board with the final NAFTA product, which obviously is different from the way the U.S. negotiated, where House Democrats basically had no input. So specifically on the NAFTA front, I think so far so good. I do think that AMLO and his administration are going to take a different stance when it comes to issues like immigration, with domestic economic policy within Mexico. But from the NAFTA perspective, so far so good.
In Mexico, their monetary policy, there's been, depreciation of the peso. Has that been intentional, or is that just the byproduct of something else that's going on?
I think that's the byproduct of of something we briefly discussed earlier, which is that now that the U.S. is normalizing its monetary policy, rates are going up. We've been seeing just funds flowing out of emerging markets back into U.S. bonds. We've seen that, you know, not just in Mexico. We've seen the same patterns in Argentina and Brazil. I think we should see that as an issue of domestic monetary policy, not one of currency manipulation or countries trying to manipulate their exchange rates.
Right. Canada's having some of the same challenges in stimulating their economy as we've had. A lot of times we resorted to housing starts, and that's becoming an issue for them in Canada as well. And it is here in the U.S. What is going to be the primary stimulus of the economy moving forward? You know, we used to relax underwriting criteria for home loans and things of that nature to get housing starts up. Banks are reluctant to do that to the extent that they once did. You know, this non-conforming lending is down. You don't see a lot of that either, giving money to folks that probably shouldn't get the money. How do we go about stimulating the economy in the short term? And they used to tweak that all the time by those methods.
Well, I don't think, to be entirely honest, I think we're on a pretty good path. And I don't think there is that much need for direct stimulus right now. So the unemployment rate is below 4%. Interest rates are, you know, they've ticked up a little bit, but they're still, by historical standards, fairly low. I think if we can stay at this level of unemployment for the next 2 years, I think that would be outstanding. I don't, you know, I think this is better than the situation has been for the last 10 years. I don't, right. I really just don't see this need for any kind of drastic intervention.
Well, the next point I was going to make is the detractors to a lot of the president's policies talk about, flat wages and not significant wage growth. True, not true? And where do we see that going?
Yeah, they've been, you know, wages have not been going up super fast. That, you know, part of the tax reform plan was, of course, to try and induce more investment, more capital expenditures, more purchase of new equipment, of new software, things like that. And that will have, presumably, in the sort of mid to long term, an effect on productivity. And ultimately, it's going to have to be productivity that drives wage increases, right? You can't, you know, there's got to be a larger surplus, larger, revenues, higher sales for employers to be able to pay higher wages. And so, you know, I think the tax reform was a reasonable way to go about it. You know, you could do things like funding research and development, trying to come up with new technologies. Maybe try to move immigration toward more high-skilled immigrants who can start new companies and come up with new technologies. Things like that are going to have to be the ultimate driver of wage growth. I don't think more fiscal stimulus or aggressive monetary policy is going to deliver that in the long run.
All of the talking heads in Washington talking about bipartisan cooperation, all of this, it always seems to come back to one issue, infrastructure. Do you think that that's something that will ultimately happen? And more importantly, how important is that to the economy?
I totally agree with you that the talking heads really like to talk about how there is room for bipartisan cooperation and a big infrastructure bill. I don't think any of that's going to happen. I think by now it's become a running joke after 2 years of talk about this. But look, the two parties have very strong difference on a lot of policy issues, and that's true for infrastructure as well. Right? Both parties like to use the word infrastructure, but they mean very different things. Right? One side wants to, you know, wants to build toll roads and privatize airports. The other side wants to, you know, spend money on redecorating school buildings. That's not the same thing. The biggest priority for the Democratic Senate minority leader is a tunnel connecting New York and New Jersey. That's been the single thing the president has opposed to most, I think, when it comes to ultra specific policy proposals. So I don't know. It's hard for me to imagine something substantive coming out of the new constellation of Congress, but, you know, who knows?
It's always the micro versus the macro, right? What the little individual towns or big towns or whatever need to stimulate their economy, as opposed to infrastructure growth that helps everybody across the country in that spend. And I guess it's identifying those projects. But I agree with you. I don't see this happening because then the president would be the beneficiary of the plus or the upside of that issue.
Yeah, I think that's right. So you'll see some small ball initiatives that individual congressmen or senators who are needed for, you know, one of those must-have votes that they can show their constituents something. But I really don't see a major, like, $2 trillion infrastructure package. I also don't think that's, you know, now is not the time for that. The unemployment is very low. The deficit is enormous. I think this is not the best time for a big infrastructure package.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. And oftentimes, the members of Congress don't like to hear that because then they can't spend more money.
That's right.
Final thoughts?
Well, I think I agree with you. I don't think we'll see much legislative action in the next 2 years. And hopefully we can reduce the deficit a little bit while the economy does so well.
All righty. Stan Voigger with the American Enterprise Institute. We always appreciate your insight. Have a great week and take care. I think winter's
out there, too.
Right?
Okay. That's right.
All righty. We're going to continue this conversation. Want to know what you're thinking. Do you feel like your discretionary amount of money has gone up? Do you look forward to your tax return in the filing in April of 2019, and where you will see the benefit of the tax package? And how do you feel about the economy? And do you feel that Congress really will be able to deal with anything on a bipartisan nature? We'll be right back after the break. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL. We're back, and in the post-term elections, and it was this way before, you know, there were more jobs available than there are people. The fact is that unemployment is down, and there are a lot of folks that have not re-entered into the market by choice for any number of reasons, and one of them is child care provisions. There are a lot of economists that believe that if there were more opportunities for enhancement of child care provisions to help folks who want to participate fully in the labor market, that it would enhance labor supply. It's a big issue in Europe, and it's not as big of an issue here. And also vocational training and apprenticeships and giving folks the opportunity that are not going to go through that four-year collegiate experience and do something all in an alternative education to college to try and maximize the number of people to enter the labor market on a full-time basis. In the interim, you know, you do see increases in wages. We're going to be talking to the teachers in the next hour. I mean, it's a big issue with teachers. There's a shortage of teachers across the country. They are getting enormous from any number of different areas around the country. Teachers today have bags, will travel, can move just about anywhere they want with their certifications for the most part. Just have to do some paperwork in some of the other states. They're pretty nimble. They're very mobile, and they can go to other areas of the country and make more money. And so the problem is that we're in a very competitive, tight market for quality teachers, and it continues to be an issue, and it serves our interests to think about these things. And it's the same in healthcare. Healthcare is a huge issue right now in our local economy. We've expanded the healthcare economy here on any number of fronts, a new VA hospital, a new charity, or LCMC hospital, and there's any number of opportunities there. There's a lot of competition here in the local market. Unfortunately, there's probably been a little bit of an out-migration that's greater than the in-migration of nurses, nurse assistants, nurse practitioners, things of that nature. So there's a lot of competition on the wage in the wage arena, for nurses as well, and you're beginning to see that, and things will tighten up in a huge way as the increases in wages for any number of companies and having to deal with that. It's a good thing that we're expanding the economy in those respects, but there are some downside implications in the short term and trying to figure out how we're going to go about dealing with that in the long term. I know the governor and his staff, we had Dr. Rebecca Guillen here from the Department of Health the other day talking about the realignment of the private and public collaboratives, the public hospitals that have been privatized for management purposes. They're trying to work through those issues in order to bring about some stability there as well. And the costs continue to go up, and it makes it harder to stabilize that because in an aging population, the same thing that Stan Voiger pointed out about the challenges that Japan has is some of the same challenges that we have here in the metropolitan area. We need to grow the younger demographic groups moving into this city in a huge way because we've become a very aging population here, and it makes the labor markets even tighter for a number of folks, and it's a bigger challenge for small business. So we want to hear what you think about this. Do you really believe that Congress will act in a bipartisan manner and engage in meaningful conversations on meaningful issues that will make a difference to our economy both in the short term and the long term? When we return, this is Newell on WWL. We're back at On the Blue Runner Opinion Poll. Are you expecting an uptick in the economy after the midterm election results? 78% of the respondents saying no. I think a lot of folks with all of the more negative news than positive news, number of the positive things, and we talk about the negative things as well. I started off the show saying Trump's blaming the Democrats for the downturn. I don't believe that. I think that there was going to be a market correction no matter what, and I don't think it's about the angst and anxiety of the Democrats taking control of Congress. Now, I do believe that there are some things that are being said by some of the Democrats, like Maxine Waters, saying that if she gets to be in charge of the Financial Committee, that she's going to do to the financial industry what they've done to them. Now, I don't know who them is, but I don't even know why you would go there. Why do you feel it necessary to go and say that if you're going to be sitting there, much like in almost a regulatory seat as a chair of that committee and pulling members of the financial community in front of the committee and say that you've got a predetermined destination where you want to get as it relates to them? Really? That's positive. Don't you want to put most of the companies in this country, if not all, in a position to succeed? Is that not what we would desire for all American companies and their workers and everyone else to succeed? Or is it that we're afraid that one company or another company is going to make too much money and they'll create too much wealth for themselves and that is something that we don't want to see happen? It's capitalism. If we don't want capitalism and we're going to move somewhere else, then you have those arguments. And, you know, so we'll see how that plays out. And what that's ultimately going to mean. But when we continue to say these, and Trump is just as guilty of it, folks. So let me just clear the air. Let me clear the record on this. He's just as guilty of making these statements that have downstream implications. And now, because it's almost retaliatory to Trump, everybody wants to engage in the vitriol and make these statements that they don't understand what the downstream implications are going to be. And I think we all have to collectively get smarter about what we're saying if we really want the tide to rise for all. Now, I have my suspicions that there are some, one might argue, that doesn't want the tide to rise for all. They want the tide to rise for some and not so much for others. When we come back out of the break, we're going to be talking to Larry Carter, the interim president of the Louisiana Federation of Teachers. What will keep Louisiana teachers from walking off the job? We'll be right back.